Welcome to F1 Debrief episode 97. It's better than silence because silence is bad. Coming up this week, we discuss the FIA photo war, final testing conclusions and your predictions.
Welcome back to Motors TV. Jeremy Shaw there on our international feed, just talking to Sebastian Bourdais, who does enjoy his racing, and great to see an active Formula One driver doing some other forms of racing. Hello to everybody at sidepodcast.com, loving the coverage and liking our Midweek Motorsport podcast too as well. Midweek Motorsport, part of the Radio Le Mans empire.
So what did we spend the weekend doing?
Well, we might have spent all of yesterday, being Saturday, live commenting Sebring.
12 hours of it. And what 12 hours it was.
Well, yeah.
You're not happy about the result, right?
Well, you know, second is all right.
You never expected Frank to win it.
No, I didn't.
Did you see that Audi?
I always thought that McNish would win it, but then I saw pictures of Frank on the podium and he looked so miserable that I'm miserable too.
I'll allow you that misery.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for KERS, as Ferrari have said they are ready and willing to race their device in Melbourne. Renault announced they'll be running it, and BMW are still to decide, but could if they wanted to. At least it means the new technology is coming in and isn't just a load of hot air.
It's a surprising selection of teams that have decided to announce they're going to be running it, because Ferrari were the first team to be up in arms against the concept of using KERS. They were, at the beginning of the testing, they were behind. They were saying they were having problems with it. Montezemolo wasn't keen to be using KERS and he was dead against it. Suddenly, they're one of the first to run it. Renault, Flavio has had nothing but bad things to say about KERS and he's decided it's a complete waste of money and he's not happy about it. Renault are running it.
You would have thought Williams would be right up there.
And yeah, BMW, I would say, would be expected. I'm still surprised Braun GP haven't decided to run with theirs. And yeah, the two least likely teams that we expected to be running KERS, they're the ones who are guaranteed to run in Melbourne.
It's been a bad week for Braun GP as they've been handed the last spot in the pit lane. This does actually make sense as the FIA are treating them as a new entry and waiving the entry fee rather than just replacing the Honda team. I also don't know how much harm it'll do them because McLaren didn't do so badly when they were stuck down there.
It's some circuits, it might be an advantage because when the pit lane reverses, they'll be the first car out or they may be the first car into the box. They won't have to dodge any other teams. It does mean they get the smallest garages available.
But they haven't got anything to put in there anyway, so
they've got no team members.
It's been a good week for fans of the Singapore Street Circuit as they have named three of the corners. The circuit organisers offered up a competition for fans to win the chance to name the corners and they received 1,800 entries and we now have them. The first corner will be Shears, turn 7 is Memorial and turn 10, the chicane named as Singapore Sling.
So what about the rest of the corners?
I haven't seen any other names.
Is it going to be an annual competition?
Maybe.
Until we fill up the whole circuit?
Until it's all done.
And what of Valencia? What are they going to be doing?
They should do the same thing. It's been a bad week for us, as Jean Todt has left all his posts at Ferrari. He stepped back from the team principal role previously, but has now left the company altogether. This is a bad week because it means we're not sure what he's going to do next. He could be up for the FIA president role.
Yes.
At least before we knew where he was and what he was doing.
This wasn't entirely unexpected. I'm amazed that there wasn't more of a fuss made of it. Because, I mean, Ferrari came out and said, he's great, he's done a great job, and he's always going to be part of the Ferrari family. There wasn't a huge presentation or a huge handover or a great big goodbye. There was no party and no cake.
It was a bit of a surprise. I mean, he didn't say, I'm going to retire soon or anything. He's just gone. He just left.
So no mention of where he's going.
I wonder if it wasn't particularly friendly.
Possibly. Possibly. I'm just more concerned that he's now on the loose.
News and views.
We talked a lot last week about testing and how the teams were getting on, and they've finished up now. The four teams had their little extension in Jerez.
Yes. Obviously, the main teams we talked about, they got on Bernie's plane early.
Yep.
The other four teams went round the Jerez circuit a little bit more, put a few miles on the clock. It's done. We're done with testing.
Yep.
Until Christmas.
They gradually dropped off until it was just McLaren and Williams left at the bitter end.
Yes.
McLaren, much improved, it has to be said.
We don't have much of a benchmark. Williams were, or did finish ahead of them. Again, we can only look at the times. We have no idea what they were doing, what fuel loads they were running, and whether or not it was some kind of glory lap just for the headlines. It does look like McLaren found a little bit more pace. They brought new parts to the car, threw more Flovis paint at the bodywork, so we now have even more information as to what that rear wing really is doing. But they did look like they've managed to claw back some of that, some of the pace they've been losing in recent tests.
Well, by the end of the week, they posted a 1:17.9. On the final day in Jerez at the previous test, they were third with a 1:21. 0.2. Right. Now, some of that must be down to the circuit because Williams were so much faster as well.
Yep.
But at least it means, you know, they're getting competitive.
What we don't know is how much Williams were sandbagging and how much of that pace is genuine. We don't know how much rubber was laid down and whether or not that affected the pace at all. And also, I believe the temperatures did increase a little bit, so that made them a little bit quicker. However, McLaren aren't as slow as we had them down as being last week.
Williams were running without their cockpit skate fin things.
Yep.
Because at the end of the Barcelona test, Charlie Whiting flew in. He told Williams to take away their fins. BMW to take away their fins. I didn't even know they had any.
They had little cockpit winglets.
Oh, right. Okay. He looked at the diffusers, and as far as we can tell, he didn't okay them.
No.
But the FIA have said it's too late to do anything about them.
This is dodgy. This is bad news for the first race of the season. It's bad news for Formula One fans, and it's going to paint Formula One in a bad light yet again, because what's going to happen is whoever wins in Melbourne, there's going to be a protest because nobody's happy about the rear diffusers and other various parts.
Autosport reported this week that one team has written to the FIA stating they believe them to be illegal.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that Braun have pushed it a little bit farther. I mean, they look at the pace they have in during testing. They have something of a unique diffuser. The thing is, it's up to the teams who haven't figured out these loopholes in the rules to figure them out quickly and to bring out a competing diffuser. And at the moment, because they haven't got time to do that, they're likely to complain.
What effect is it going to have on FOTA, though?
Well, that's a good question, because obviously some of the members of FOTA will be protesting other members of the FOTA, and that hasn't happened since the body came together. It might put a strain on it. You'd hope it wouldn't, because you'd expect this to happen at some point in the future. There's an argument to say the FIA are allowing this to come to fruition at the race, because politically it might disadvantage the FOTA group. It might, you know, has the possibility of splitting them apart.
Max said that he would have sent it to the Court of Appeal before Australia, but because it's too late and he didn't have complaints in time to do that.
Yeah, right.
He says it will go to Australia and there may be protests.
I'm not entirely sure they are illegal. I can see that the regulations were designed in such a way. I think what the teams that are doing the dodgy things are up to, they've actually used the lower plane of the rear wing as the roof of the diffuser. And it's a flaw in the regulations, and they should have tied it down and they haven't. What I don't think should be happening is we shouldn't be using the first race of the new Formula One season to test out these things. And the FIA should have got involved earlier, and they haven't. And that's a shame for Formula One and a shame for the fans, because there will be complaints. And we won't know who's won the race until it goes to arbitration, potentially, several months down the line. And that's not a great way to paint the sport. It's not a great light to paint the sport in. And it's, you know, it doesn't give us a good feeling to the start of the year.
RG said in the comments, which team do we think were the FIA pets, and wrote the letter. He reckons Ferrari. I don't know. I reckon Renault, because they're the ones complaining about it so much.
They are complaining quite loudly. I don't understand, if it's a team complaining about another team, why they don't sort it out within FOTA. If they're all best of buddies and they're all getting along behind closed doors, they're all putting out simultaneous press releases and everybody agrees the sport's going in the right direction, why can't they just basically sit around the same table and say, actually, I really don't like what you're doing with your diffuser. Can you change it? I don't understand why it's unnecessary to the FIA when there's a complaint. The thing is, it would be a brilliant story if Braun GP come out and win after having such a dire 2 years as Honda, potentially disappearing from the sport during the off-season and then coming back in the very dying stages of the off-season. And it would be a wonderful headline for Formula One to say, Braun GP, come back, you know, rising from the flames, going out and they are winning a Grand Prix. And then for another team to come along and say, actually, we're going to protest that win because we don't think your diffuser is legal. And to then explain that to the fans, who are, you know, absolutely ecstatic that this backmarker team, which is basically what Honda have been for the last 2 years, has suddenly climbed the way to the front. I can't see it going down too well.
So obviously the main news of the week is the FIA and their attempt to change the point system, and FOTA actually sticking together for a change.
Yes. Now, I may not be the person to sit here and discuss this, because I believe I am slightly at odds with everybody else in the entire world. Do tell us what. Well, roll back to, was it Tuesday this week when the initial decision was made by the World Motorsport Council?
They held a meeting on the 17th of March, and they came up with some changes to the regulations for the 2009 season.
Yes.
With only days to go. So they changed the point system so that points would still be awarded for the Constructors' Championship and to calculate the order further down the driver's title, but the champion would be decided on wins and wins alone.
Controversial.
Now, this was hugely unpopular.
With everybody but me. I should say that I've been following the SciPodcast comments. I've been following various blogs and news sites around the world, and everybody seems to originally, when the first decision was made, very bad. Nobody really approved of it. That lasted for 3 days?
FOTA issued a statement straight away saying they were disappointed that the FIA had gone ahead and made these changes without consulting them. Over the next few days, Button, Briatore, Alonso, Schumacher, Webber, De Montezemolo and Hamilton all came out, and basically the feeling was they could understand why the FIA were changing things, but this was not the way to go. On the 20th of March, FOTA issued a statement saying that the decision by the FIA to change the regulations was actually illegal because it was so close to the beginning of the season, and the FIA came out and said, yeah, okay, we'll postpone it until 2010.
Right, at which point all the fans said, okay, that's exactly what we wanted. Yay for FOTA, everybody's happy. Like I said, I'm probably not the best person to talk about this because when the initial decision came out and everybody exploded in outrage, I have to say I wasn't that bothered. I didn't think it was the worst decision that the FIA have ever made. It did seem a little bit late. It was a little bit rushed. And you could question as to why they decided to come out with that decision. However, I can't say that I was particularly bothered. If we had gone for wins for the rest of the year, it would have been different and it would have been worth seeing what happened. But it wasn't exactly the end of the world. What was your take on the initial decision?
Well, my main concern was that it's just too confusing. I mean, even for regular viewers, it's difficult to see why a driver with more points doesn't win the championship. So yeah. For new viewers, that's even worse.
You could have problems with the a table that lists the driver order. If a driver scored a number of seconds, bagged a huge amount of points, and another driver came along, got a couple of wins, he would be above the guy with more points than him, which would be confusing to explain. But again, one of the biggest arguments about it, I think, was that the championship could be over by halfway through the season.
Yeah, it could be over by Germany. That was also my only real complaint.
What I would say is that if even with the existing system and the system we've reverted back to, if Braun GP do continue their testing pace through into the beginning of the season, we could still end up with, if you get Braun 1-2, for the first couple of races, it could still be over by Germany. Or
it's
some
less
point in the
likely,
season.
Though, because if you'll get Braun GP at the top, but you'll also get another team that are constantly scoring seconds and thirds. Whereas in the wins idea, that doesn't count for anything.
No, that does mean teams will go for an out and out win. On the other hand, I can see the argument that a guy who was happy to trundle around in second, as Alonso did, I think it was in his 2005 campaign, where basically he just ended up finished second, and he won the world championship as a result of being consistent and not racing. And Kimi lost that championship by racing his heart out and breaking down and crashing. And therefore, you would argue that Kimi was the better racer and probably was more deserving of that world championship. However, it was Alonso that bagged it because he bagged more points. So I can see that there is a need to promote, the guy who wins the most races throughout the year should, by rights, win the world championship.
When the FIA retracted their point system change, they said that the World Motorsport Council believed the teams were behind the wins idea.
Right.
Because they were behind the medals idea, which I didn't think they were.
No.
I thought they wanted to make the gap in the points bigger.
Yes, I mean, the photo came out with what seemed like a very reasoned and sensible idea, which was based on actual research of asking non-passionate, mostly ambivalent fans who aren't that fussed and aren't that dedicated followers of Formula One what they would like to see. And that, I believe, is the results that they come up with. So FOTA had a reasonable argument. However, the FIA aren't going to give an inch when it comes to FOTA. And I think we saw the first blow in what may become a very long-running argument between the two factions. So you've got one side, FOTA, on the other side, the FIA, and somewhere in the middle is Bernie, who's probably playing them both in order to get what he wants. And you could see that in the FIA press release that came out on Friday, which is basically, we implemented this because Bernie told us that the teams told him that they wanted the wins idea pushed through. So the FIA are blaming everybody but themselves. And it looks like, essentially, FOTA have come out of it looking quite bad.
Well, one thing I have noticed is that FOTA are very like you said, they came up with a reasoned argument for the change in the point system that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were arguing against this wins idea, they were very reasonable about it. They said, what you're doing is illegal because all the teams haven't agreed to it. And we will work with you for a new system in 2010. And they just seem to be really, really reasonable.
Yep.
Whereas the FIA don't.
No. I should say that I really like FOTA. I like what they're doing. I kind of believe they're on a hiding to nothing. And I don't think they realise what they're up against in Bernie and the FIA. I do like that it was FOTA have pushed through the changes we're gonna see in Melbourne, in the fact that we're going to get full radio, the ability to listen to full radio conversations during the race. We're going to get better things like more interactive graphics when Bernie has time to bring them on board, because the FOTA have proposed these ideas and Bernie's agreed with it. So what they're doing is absolutely, you know, it should be completely commended. We love the teams for doing it, and I'm, you know, I completely respect what they're trying to do. I just don't think they're going to succeed.
Well, I don't remember who it was, but someone within the paddock this week said that, you know, now we've got FOTA, we've got the fans, everyone is on the same side, and it's basically us against the FIA.
And Bernie.
Yeah.
That's the key. I think we can now say, and we talked about this a while ago, were Bernie and Max against each other, or were they working together? In light of this argument, I believe they are working together to get whatever they can, and to force FOTA into submission. And, you know, the Fuser argument may be something that ends up pushing FOTA over the edge. It may take a little bit longer, but it looks like the FIA are not taking any prisoners, and they're not giving up control of what happens within Formula One.
Well, they also came out with some other regulation changes for 2009. Teams are allowed 3 young driver training days after Abu Dhabi, but before the 31st of December.
Right. So this is what used to be winter testing.
Yeah, it's now young driver testing.
It's been curtailed. It says young driver testing, but aren't ex-Formula One drivers also potentially able to take...
Well, it's something like someone that hasn't driven in a certain time frame.
Yes, so Michael Schumacher is more than able to take those seats.
Possibly.
Which might make him more useful to Ferrari at the end of the year.
They're also allowed 8 one-day straight-line tests at pre-approved tracks between the 1st of January and Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Hasn't the 1st of January already gone?
Now, this is curious, because what they've done, they've backdated a ruling. And no team has come out and complained about this as yet.
But we've seen some straight-line testing.
I've seen
the pictures.
Yeah, there's been straight-line testing since January. And we can only assume that those straight-line tests have counted towards this new rule. So both Renault and McLaren were doing straight-line tests. McLaren have done more. And it looks like the FIA have now said, well, actually, you've got a maximum of 8, presumably of which McLaren have... It looks like they've used maybe half by our calculations. It's possible that the teams knew this was going to happen, and McLaren went into 2009 knowing this.
So they were already working.
And they're happy to use up some of their 8 days. And that's fine if that's what's happened.
But really, is Kemble Airfield a pre-approved track?
We don't know. We don't know what the pre-approved...
Why do they get to choose which tracks teams go to as well?
Well, you can see why the rule's been brought in. It seems like a sensible idea, because what they've had, the FIA have restricted testing this year. They said, right, we're putting all these restrictions on testing. You're not testing at all during the season. At the end of the year, you can do young driver testing, and then in January, you can get back to doing what you normally did. So they've restricted testing to restrict costs. There was a loophole with straight-line testing, because effectively, as long as you were going up and down an airfield in a straight line, you were free to do whatever you wanted to do. So the FIA had to step in if they're going to really control costs and do something. So in order for the FIA to be able to control something, they need to limit the places that straight-line testing can happen. And they need those places to report who's been testing and when. We don't know whether Kemble, which was where we saw McLaren and Renault testing, is one of the approved places. And if it isn't, and the teams have been testing there already, what will happen?
I think essentially it's a good idea, though, especially the young driver training, if it is young driver training, because they don't get a chance in the car at all.
That is true. But we'd like to see what I would like to see, rather than the rules they brought in, I'd like to see Fridays become more of a young driver testing weekend. There's no reason why the third driver, the reserve driver for every team, couldn't be a young driver, and you couldn't give those guys mileage on Fridays. We used to have that. There was an option for teams to choose to run Friday test days instead of testing during the season, and I wouldn't mind seeing that come back. And for some reason, we haven't. And I think that's a bit of a mistake from the FIA.
Like you mentioned earlier, we may be getting new graphics when Bernie gets around to it, because the FIA are mandating more information for fans and the media.
About flipping time.
In their press release, they said weights after qualifying will be published. They're mandating a lot of autograph sessions, and drivers need to be available after pretty much every session for interviewing.
Right.
Also, a member of each team needs to be available during the race for TV broadcasters.
Okay, going back to the first point, which was the point about weights. Now, that's interesting because I don't know if I like the sound of this. Essentially, it's going to... isn't it going to make qualifying a bit of a waste of time? Because if people are qualifying on race fuel and we know how much race fuel they have, where is the element of surprise come race day?
Perhaps that satisfies the people that don't like the fact that you don't know whether someone's qualifying pace is genuine or not.
Well, I can see that, but then why not do away with race fuel during qualifying? Why not just literally see who the fastest car is? Because the one and only thing that made race fuel interesting on qualifying day was the fact that we didn't know and we had to guess and surmise and try and figure out what kind of pace the car really had. If you're going to run with race fuel, then admit what fuel you're running. That makes Saturday afternoon a waste of time and gives us nothing to do in the evening.
It would also make sense to do away with race fuel if only because of the green element.
Well, there is that. And I guess they could be preparing for next year when they're proposing that refueling will be banned. However, I still like the idea of qualifying on race fuel and then us speculating for 24 hours as to who may be quick and who may not be quick. I like that element of surprise. I'd be disappointed if they do give away the secrets on a Saturday afternoon.
On the autograph, mandated autograph sessions subject, Jernier and I had a great discussion this week about that because I am in favour.
You are in favour?
Yes.
And why wasn't Jernier in favour of mandated autographs?
Well, he said, I mean, his initial argument was that if you mandate it too much, Kimi isn't going to like it.
Yep.
And he might retire.
Okay. Well, then Kimi is a miserable so-and-so.
Well, that's what I said. I said that it's good to get immediate reactions, immediate access to...
drivers.
The drivers.
Well, that's good. My only concern about the autograph session is the drivers are going to be in the pit lane on Friday. Who can get in the pit lane? That's my question.
That is a good question.
Because surely you're limiting the amount of fans who actually have access to this. I don't understand how to get in the pit lane on Friday. I believe you can buy tickets because F1 Wolf said he's going to be in there in Melbourne, so that's good. However, if it's not a general access thing for any fans, and it's only limited to the people who can afford to be in the pit lane, then possibly it's not that great a step forward. I mean, it is a step forward, but it's just a small step and not such a massive step. I like the idea that drivers... I really do like the idea that drivers have to...
be available after the sessions.
Yeah, and be more open. And, you know, if they've had a bad race and they're in a bad mood, well, tough. Because
talk to us about it.
Yeah, tell us why. And you know, we may be more understanding rather than just, you know, silently leaving the circuit.
In the comments, Ollie says his only concern about the extra attention on drivers is that it will be more of the PR drivel.
See, that's a fair argument. However, if it's executed the way I assume it will be, it means the driver leaves his car, he comes back to the paddock once his race is over or when qualifying is over, and the first thing that happens is he speaks to the TV crew. Now, I don't know whether there's going to be time for a driver to go through a briefing session and then be briefed with PR rubbish. What I'm hoping will happen is they'll essentially come straight out of the car and have a microphone put right under their nose and be, you know, be obliged to speak. And then we'll know exactly what's going on and not what the PR officer wants us to know is going on. They could be pre-briefed. They could have some kind of memorized script.
But I think even if, I mean, obviously we all hate the PR stuff, but even if that is all we get more of, more is still better.
It's better than silence.
Yeah.
Because silence is bad. I do like Kimi a lot, and some of his answers are funny. However, it can get a little bit annoying when, you know, he's not answering the questions that are being asked of him. It can be humorous, but you don't learn anything when he speaks.
The other thing the FIA spoke out about was a 2010 rule, which would see optional budget caps.
Right.
Which is a crazy idea. The budget cap would be £30 million covering all expenditure, but budget-capped cars have greater technical freedom, so they can have movable wings and a non-frozen engine and maybe extra KERS storage.
Yeah.
So basically, you've got cars running to one set of regulations and cars running to another set.
At the moment, I agree, and the cap is amazingly low to run a Formula One team. But is it $30 million?
£30 million.
Pounds, English, yes, pounds. Okay.
Yes. Well, it does seem weird to say if you spend less money, you can do more development, but you can't because you can't afford it.
Well, if you do it more efficiently, it would work out well. I can see the argument. I've actually, to be honest with you, I've sort of ignored it and I've not looked into it and I've not thought about it.
Well, I do think if they can change regulations this close to the 2009 season,
yeah,
then 2010 is a long way away.
Yeah, it's round one. It's an initial suggestion from the FIA. There's certainly nothing to state that it will happen, and there's nothing to state that it won't get changed and amended during the next 12 months. Therefore,
I almost
moment,
guarantee it will.
Yeah, and that's why I've ignored it. That's why I've not paid too much attention to it or thought about it. It's an interesting concept from an entirely abstract point of view. I don't know if it appeals. It seems like a peculiar way to run a sport.
I just don't think you can have two different regulations.
You do in sports car racing, as we saw at the weekend. So you've got one class and then another class. And they race side by side and one goes quicker than the other.
That's different, isn't it?
It is very much different. And that's what, yeah, it's an interesting concept. I suspect that what it really is Max saying to Foti, if you're not going to slash your costs, if you're not going to come on board with these cost-cutting plans, this is what we're gonna do. So as ever, it's almost a shame that it ends up public. You know, this kind of spat ends up public because really it's a private matter between the FIA and Foti at the moment, and they need to bang their heads together and work out some more details into how it's going to happen. On the other hand, I will say that the FIA have done a sterling job with their Formula 2 championship. That car looks pretty handy. It's unbelievably cheap, and it staggered even Frank Williams at how cheap that car can be made to run and how cheap you can run a championship. So if the FIA can do it in Formula 2, maybe they can do it for Formula 1. Fantasy
Racers. So we're not doing a roll call this week for Fantasy Racers, but I would just like to say we have 316 teams. That's amazing.
Fantastic.
I said, I think earlier in the week, I wonder if we'll get to 300 before the racing starts.
Right.
Well, we've passed that. Will we get to 400 before the racing starts?
That's an astonishing amount. I'm well impressed with the turnout for Fantasy Racers this year. That's brilliant. We've got to do a lot more with it, and I'm looking forward to it.
Before the racing gets going, there's just a few stats that I thought were interesting. Firstly, let's have a quick look at some of the countries that our joinees have signed up with.
Nice one. Okay.
Because we do a few blog posts on this occasionally, and we're always amazed at how many US people sign up, and Bernie should pay attention.
Yes.
This time, I mean, of course, you have to take into account that some people have more than one team.
Yep.
Because we have actively encouraged that this year. In the UK, we've got 98 teams. The USA have 68, and Australia have 31. Nice. That's our top three countries.
Good stuff.
There are lots of countries with just one, like Argentina and Brazil, Hong Kong, Austria, Poland. I bet that's a Kubica fan. And China. And four people selected no country whatsoever.
They live on the moon?
Have you picked your drivers yet?
No.
What?
I'm going to do it. I only have one team. You have five teams.
No, I have one team.
You have one team. I thought you have the option to have five.
I do.
And why haven't you got five?
Because it's hard enough for me to make up one team at a time.
That's basically why I've only
got one.
I can't
make five lots of decisions.
I haven't made my decision. I am going to leave it as late as possible, but not too late. I want to see what happens on Friday before I pick my team. So no, I'm not committing to anything just yet. Although I would be keen to know what everybody else has picked first.
Well, I'll tell you what I picked. Who I picked, I should say. Alonso, Button, Kubica, Barrichello and Vettel.
Why have you picked those?
Well, I chose the two Braun guys first because I think they might do pretty well and it's always good to have faith.
Okay.
Then I picked Alonso because I want him to do well. And then I couldn't decide between Vettel and Kubica. So in the end, I picked both. And then I was only left with 1.9 million.
Wow. So you're very close. Is it 40 million we've got to play with?
Yes.
To start with. So you're pretty close to the margin on that one. I couldn't tell you who I'm going to go at the moment. I don't know if I'd want two Braun drivers, though.
I looked at the top selection stats across the whole of Fantasy Races, and Vettel is the most selected driver at the moment.
So that's not just in the Side Podcast League.
Nope.
That's everybody.
Yep.
And do you know how many teams there are at the moment within Fantasy Races? It's several thousand, isn't it?
It's 2,300 something.
That's an amazing response. Okay, so Vettel's number one.
1,200 people have picked Vettel. Also above 1,000 selections, Alonso, Hamilton and Kubica.
Okay.
The lowest is Nakajima with 56.
Oh.
And Buemi also has only 84.
Not a popular choice then. I guess we don't know how he's going to do.
With Buemi, you just don't know, do you? The most expensive driver is Hamilton, followed by Massa, and then Raikkonen, and cheapest is Sutil and Fisichella, and then the two Braun GP drivers as well.
So they're cheap.
They are.
Oh, they've got to be a good... Oh, now I'm interested in getting both Braun GP drivers.
There you go, see? In the leagues, like I said, we are top with 316 entrants as of yesterday, followed by the Autosport League with 91.
They ran us close last year.
Yeah.
Battle is on.
Yeah, and the next league down has 33. I joined the Pit Lane Fanatic League, and it was brilliant because I was in first place the minute I joined.
Because they order you by the time you signed up.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else to order you by on.
Yeah.
So you're number one by... Then the fact that you joined up before everybody else.
It's the only time I'm going to be number one in any league ever.
And you're proud of that?
Yes.
Feedback.
Last year, we asked for your Australia predictions and were super impressed when we received about 10 of them. This year, as requested by the listeners, we bring the predictions montage back. We have managed to double last year's submissions, so here are your predictions for the top three finishes at the 2009 Australian Grand Prix.
I am Jason from Sydney. Predictions for the upcoming Australia Grand Prix. Third place, I think Kimi Raikkonen in the Ferrari. Second place, local favourite, Mark Webber in the Red Bull. And first place, Jenson Button in the new Braun GP.
Hi, this is Junior, and my predictions for the top three finishers in Australia are third place, Kimi Raikkonen, second place, Rubens Barrichello, and first place, taking his second career win, Jenson Button.
Hi, I'm Jackie, and my predictions for the top three finishers in Australia is third place, Jarno Trulli, second place, Jenson Button, and in first place, Felipe Massa. I'm usually sucking at predictions, but whatever happens, I hope you enjoy the race.
Hello, Side Podcast. This is H calling. Just calling to leave you my predictions for Melbourne. Third place, I got Alonso. Second place, Kubica. Kubica, whatever he wants to call himself. And first place is Vettel.
Hey, this is Mr. C, one-time panel host and occasional commenter. My predictions for Melbourne are Barrichello in third, Nick Heidfeld in second, and Kimi for the win.
Hello, cyclist. It's Pat from toomuchracing.blogspot.com. My predictions for Australia are in third position, Lewis Hamilton, in second, Fernando Alonso, and the winner, Kimi Raikkonen. I don't think Braun or Red Bull will be that reliable, even though they've been very quick.
Hello, it's RG. You may have heard of me before. Here's my predictions for Australia. In third, I'm going for Robert Kubica. Second, I'm going for Timo Glock, because I can. And in going to win, I'm going to go for a surprise in... I think Braun GP will come nowhere, and there's going to be a huge, massive startline crash like 2002.
Hi, this is Ollie from bloggers1.co.uk, and these are my predictions for the 2009 Australian Grand Prix. For third place, I have Jarno Trulli in the Toyota. For second, BMW's Nick Heidfeld, and not only for the Melbourne win, but also for the championship, Kimi Raikkonen.
Hello, this is Dan Brunel from racingeagles.com. Hope everybody's well inside podcast land. Anyhow, here's my Australian predictions. Third place, Robert Kubica. Second place, Felipe Massa. First place, Kimi Raikkonen, coming back with some revenge.
Hi, I'm Warnes from New Jersey, and my predictions for the top three finishes in Australia are third place, Robert Kubica, second place, Kimi Raikkonen, and first place, Jenson Button.
This is Jordan here calling. It's going to be Kimi time, and Kimi time means it's going to be Kimi Raikkonen finishing first in the Ferrari. He's going to come back in second. I think it's going to be the good old Renault days are coming back. No, it's not going to be Nin Pick Jr., but it's going to be Fernando Alonso in P2. So I'm going to put Sebastian Vettel in third with the Red Bull because they're just the kit's amazing, and I think the Red Bull car is going to step it up big time this year.
Hey, I'm Lou, and my predictions for the top three finishers in Australia are third place, Fernando Alonso, second place, Felipe Massa, and first place, Jenson Button.
Hey guys, it's Dom. Not sure it's ever been this hard to predict the top three, but I'm going to go with Heidfeld third, Felipe second, and Jensen first. Fingers crossed Braun is strong this year, but Massa's got a good car under him and he's very determined, so he's one to look out for too.
Hi, this is Chris Vampire, and my predictions for the top two finishes in Australia are in third place Massa, second place Kubica, first place Vettel. A bit off topic, but I also think Force India will score a point at some point in the season.
Hey guys, hope you're not too busy before the season. Stephen Roy here. My predictions for Melbourne, based on complete and utter ignorance, are third place Nico Rosberg, second place Rubens Barrichello, first place Lewis Hamilton. I have absolutely no idea how I come up with these. They're just a complete guess.
Hi, I'm Christine. First time caller, long time host. My predictions for Australia. Third place, Alonso. Second place, Kubica. And first place, Raikkonen. I think there are going to be a lot of retirees.
Hi, I'm Salador. My predictions for top three finishers in Australia are third place, Rubens Barrichello. Second place, Kimi Raikkonen. And first place, Robert Kubica.
Hi Christine, it's Paul H here. My predictions are Felipe Massa first, Robert Kubica second, Nico Rosberg third. So we'll see how that goes. Bye.
Hi, I'm Al, and my predictions for the top three finishers in Australia are third place, Jenson Button, second place, Robert Kubica, and in first place, Kimi Raikkonen.
Hello, this is your Welsh friend Lukey, and my predictions for the top three finishers in Australia are in third place, Rubens Barrichello. In second place, Rubens Barrichello. In first place, Rubens Barrichello. And fastest lap, Yano Trulli.
How awesome was that?
That was pretty good.
That was an amazing mix. You did good there. So we heard from people we've not heard from before. People in the comments. Though.
Yes.
We've got Luke, yep. Al, Paul H we haven't heard from, H and Salador. All new callers. Let's hope it's not the last time.
And there were some very interesting predictions as well.
Barrichello's going to do well to finish in all those spots.
Button also very, very, very popular. One, two, three, four, five people have him for the win.
Wow.
Five people
have chose Jenson Button.
Yeah, and do you know what else? Hamilton only suggested for one win and one third place.
That is a surprise. What a turnaround from Brazil.
I also thought it was interesting. Two people had Trulli for third place, and two people had Rosberg for third place, so that might be the surprise podium.
We are expecting a mixed up race. I like Kimi time.
It's Kimi time, yet pretty much everyone was a fan of Kimi. He either is leading or somewhere in the podium.
And this is following the year he had last year.
Yeah. I was a bit surprised that only three people mentioned Vettel. I thought he would be more popular.
I think that car's going to be quicker, to be honest with you. I believe it's going to do well. Although, did I mention him in my predictions? I forgot what I said now. No, I didn't. I didn't have Vettel in there either, even though
you
I do
said,
think it's going to do well.
Barrichello, Heidfeld, Raikkonen for the win.
It's too late to change it. We're going to look back in December at all of these and see who was anywhere near close. Housekeeping. So, bit of an exciting week inside Podland.
You've had a very exciting week. You are published.
Picked up Race Car Engineering magazine.
Yes.
Turn to page 7. On page 7, a picture of a McLaren as taken by yours truly.
Yep.
At the Kemble Airfield thingy, where McLaren were doing one of their straight line tests of the year.
Now, this wasn't a complete surprise, obviously. They didn't steal our picture.
No. They asked if Sam from the magazine said, could he use it? Craig set it up, and they told us it was going to be in there. So we went into town. I didn't know it was going to be this month, actually, in fairness. Went into town, I picked it up, and there it is. So if you haven't already got a copy of Race Car Engineering magazine this month, please, if you spot it on the shelf, do buy it.
Because he's very happy with himself.
I'm quite chuffed with seeing it in there, and I might occasionally just open the magazine just to have a look, because, you know, we've never been published.
Published photographer you are now.
Considering how rubbish our camera is and how bad the light on the day was, and I think when the picture was taken, I was basically hanging off of a crash gate, peering through the crash gate with a lens and not in a very comfortable position. It's appreciated that it's in there, and big up the Race Car Engineering guys, because you have done nothing but complain about the magazine, the fact that it is geeky.
I have nothing against it. I just think it is for uber geeks.
Yes. And now, you know, you have one less argument for not buying it. And therefore, I shall continue to.
Also this week, and a little bit of last week, I've been working hard on the F1 Digest previews.
Oh, aren't they good? I have to say, some of your best work, I think. Brilliant. I love, you've done 2 of 4 thus far.
Yeah, running out of time rapidly.
Rapidly, yep. No problem, though, because the driver's one was excellent, and I really, really enjoyed the team's digest. If anybody's subscribing to our podcast feed, and you've just passed over either of the F1 Digest, please, please, please give them a listen, because there's a huge amount of insight in them. I learned a lot. You worked really hard on them, and I think you've done a fantastic job. So big up the F1 Digest pre-season previews. Excellent work.
I have 2 more to try and fit in before next weekend. Well, really, before Thursday, because that's when F1 Digest proper starts, because that's when the racing starts.
The presses have started coming in.
Yeah.
We've had press releases from teams.
Preview quotes. This, it's brilliant.
It's the last debrief of the pre-season. From next week, we are in season.
The off-season is over.
It's done, people. It's over and done with. It's been fun, though. It's never-ending, non-stop entertainment as Formula One, you know, as we've come to expect from this sport. I cannot wait for next week. The cars have started arriving in Melbourne. We've seen the YouTube video of the cars being unloaded. They're being pushed into their garages on the other side of the world. And I cannot wait. We're going to stay up. We're going to be live commenting the whole thing, aren't we?
We're going to be all over the place at the weekend, but what we will do is put a blog post or two with our schedule that we're going to try and stick to, so that you know when we'll be around.
We had a bit of a practice yesterday. Get back into the vibe of the live commenting thing.
Yep. Hopefully we won't have to stay awake for 12 straight hours.
No races. That would be a long Formula One race. We should point out, if anyone's joined us since the end of last season, what live commenting is. Basically, every single session, 5 sessions a weekend, we all get together and we basically say what we see.
Yep, you can tune in to video, if we can find it, on the site. And everyone comes together and we just type what we're thinking as we're watching.
And it's a great way to share the race.
And it's very good because you get insights that you might have missed.
Mm-hmm.
People spot things and people can explain things, especially to me when I don't know what's going on.
It's like global knowledge. It's a great way of following the race. Really enjoyed it last year. It was a surprise last year. We didn't know what we were doing. We weren't expecting to be doing it until, I think, 2 minutes before the very first practice session of the very first race.
Last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lou said, let's live comment. We said, okay,
and
done.
And then we are. This year, we have the live comment and live thing up and running from the beginning of the season. We know exactly what we're doing. We're into the swing of it. And I think this year is going to be even better. So if you're around, please, please, please do join us in the live comments. And we'll see you there.